This is an ABC podcast.
This is Neat and Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinidal Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Hello to our PNG listeners and welcome everyone to Nesian Footy, the number one place to get your Pacifica footy news and stories in the Rugby League and Rugby Union Worlds. My name is Sam Wykes and alongside me is my Cook Island co-e, Tinidal Arona, who's about to jet set to Fiji very soon. T.
Kia ora, Sammy. I'll meet you over there, brother.
Meet you there. Can't wait.
I'm looking forward to it to cover some of them pack champs.
I thought you were going to say to get some carver, but cover. Gotcha.
Maybe there might be a couple carver ceremonies that we'll attend, but yeah. The Pacific Championships will be held over in Suva, Fiji this weekend, which we'll cover shortly. But geez, what a big game, or two big games on the weekend. The Prime Minister's 13 games that were held in Port Moresby, Papua New Guinea. We had the men's PNG play the Australian team, and then we had the women's PNG teams play Australia as well. So we will cover that also with Kiana Takarangi, who will be joining us, because Shelley Long is getting her knee surgery today.
Today, so yes.
Shelley, if you're listening, much love. We're thinking of you. And yeah, we will...
hopefully see you soon.
See you soon. But another huge guest you've managed to round up for our show here on Nesian Footy. Sammy, tell us, who do we have today?
Huge guest indeed. Physically, he's a specimen. Big boy, 197 centimetres, 125 kilos, massive Tongan, plays over in Japan with the Panasonic Wild Knights. Again, an old club, Sonny Bill's old club. So he will be talking to us, and what I'm keen to hear about is his journey, but his decision-making for choosing either Tonga, Japan, or Australia. So all of that is going to be happening in the next probably 6 months for him.
Because he made that decision to move to Japan at a young age?
Young age, when he was 18, when he left the Rebels. Oh, sorry, I think he was 20 after he made his debut for the Rebels at 18. And now he's done his time, his 5 years over there. So he'll be eligible for Japan, but he's also by heritage for Tonga. Because he was born in Australia, he could play for the Wallabies as well. So he's got to come up with that decision making. So I'm looking forward to talking to him.
Did you mention his name?
Esei Hangana.
There it is.
Lucky you're here.
Let's rip in.
Moment of the week.
Yeah, I want to talk about our moment of the week that happened over the weekend. The Manusina Samoa team, their rugby team, have qualified for the 2025 Rugby World Cup over in England.
Women's Rugby World Cup. Next year.
So they finished second in their WXV3 competition, and we'll talk more about that in our rugby news. But they, after defeating Madagascar 46-15, they now get to go over and qualify for the Rugby World Cup in 2025. Last time they qualified was in 2014, so it's been a long time for them. They head over there and have a listen to how much it means to them and how they celebrated straight after the game.
Guys, we're going to the World Cup.
Congratulations to the Manusina. How good qualifying for the 2025
Rugby brother. World Cup. Yeah, so a huge achievement for them. Obviously, you can tell it meant a lot to the players and the staff, and obviously to the people of Samoa, the way they celebrated after the game. They've been outstanding this whole year, and they'll take a lot of confidence out of that competition leading into next year's Oceania as well as World Cup. So all the best, but we'll talk more about that game in the rugby chat.
Maolele, Felisa Galfusi here, and I'm listening to Nesian Footy.
All right, Sammy, I'll kick us off with rugby league. And I mentioned the two games, the Prime Minister's 13s game. I'll start with the men's. I'll have Kiana cover the girls shortly. But, geez, I just love when the PNG Kumuls, they play in Port Moresby, in PNG, where rugby league is another religion for the people of Papua New Guinea. You just see the passion. in the crowds, in the fans, you know, the way that they cheer their team on, you know, win, lose or draw, they're always back in the PNG Kumuls. And, you know, having, I was honoured with that experience to represent the Cook Islands and play in Port Moresby. One thing a lot of, or every footy player, rugby league player speak about when they play PNG is how they're made of granite. You know, they're made of rock. They are solid. They are hard. And that's exactly what happened in this opening 10 minutes of the game where they were just putting on shots, you know, bending the Australian players backwards, putting on big hits off the kickoffs. And I just thought, yeah, this is a typical PNG Kumuls team that are out here to play. And what a start they did have. You know, after 5 minutes, they found themselves attacking the Australian line. And it was the PNG captain, Judah Rimbu, who scoots from dummy half, beats two defenders and scores under the post. Only 5 minutes later, again, PNG find themselves attacking the Australian line. So both of these times, Australia made errors. PNG get territory. They're attacking the line. And this time, with a shift to the left, the PNG centre, Robert Mathias, he scored a try for Papua New Guinea. And the halfback, Jamie Mavoko, he hits both conversions. So PNG found themselves after 10 minutes up 12-0.
How was the crowd at that point?
Cheering.
Just going off,
screaming. Hey? You know, even when the boys scored, you just see the passion, all the players just jumping on each other and the fans at the back just waving their flags, waving, you know, even the bags that they have, they're all just like swinging them around. And you just, I love to see that excitement, that passion that that team brings to that country. But once Australia, you know, found themselves into the game, you know, decided to hold the ball, not make many errors, and they started to build some real pressure. And after these two tries, Australia went on to score the next seven tries in this game before PNG scored their next points. Two great tries to Canberra Raider KO Weeks, you know, the speed that he showed. You know, he was in open space, burnt the fullback, scored a try, and then Australian Samoa winger Alofiana Khan Pereira. There was a nice shift to the left. He finishes off into the corner. So well done to Australia. But a couple moments that really stood out for me. First one, so the PNG were down 36-12 with 12 minutes to go. Australian back rower Bo Furmore, 30 metres out, he makes a break down the sideline. You know, no one's in front of him. He's about to go and score in the corner. The captain, Judah Rimbu, who scores the first try, he starts sprinting, ends up making the tackle just before he gets to the corner, and then he drops the ball, forces that error. When you're down 24-0, and you know there's only 12 minutes left on the clock, the game's done, but he just shows that passion, that pride he has for his jersey and the country and stopping that try. I thought it said a lot about him and the pride that he has for his nation. The other moment that caught my eye was a couple minutes later. There was a big shift to the left of the PNG team, 60 metres out. Dudley Dotoy, he makes a break 60 metres out from the try line. Now, he's got a PNG player on the inside. He can pass to the inside. What does he do? Chips over the top.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you're going to bump him.
No bumps. He chips over the top. So the bounce of the ball comes backwards, skips over a few players, and it lands into their 5'8" hand, Finley Glare, and he scores a try, you know, 60-meter try against the Australia team. The crowd going crazy. And then to finish the game, centre Alex Max, he scored the last try for PNG. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough. You know, Australia got the win 42-20. But I think all of those players, especially those Hunter players, you know, the local players that play in the Queensland Cup, to go up against a whole team full of NRL players, upcoming superstars, they're in a good position. And I think they're going to go a long way into these Pacific Championships because, they just showed really good signs. Speaking of, my player of the match in this game, Judah Rimbu, 32 tackles, one line break, two tackle busts, a try, and the amazing try saver towards the end of that game. Now, PNG, so they announced their Pacific Championships team, squad, over the weekend. We've seen a number of stars. So from this game, there will be a couple that will travel to Suva, Fiji, and play the Fiji Butty this weekend. But the team that they named, geez, they've got some good players there. You've got their captain and the most capped PNG player ever in Reece Martin. a number of Super League players. So you got Reece Martin, you also got Nene McDonald, ex-NRL player, playing over in the UK. We got Robert Darby, you know, then a North Queensland Cowboy. He was one of our first guests.
Yeah, he was early on.
And if you want to hear that chat, you'll find it wherever you get your podcasts. Jack DeBullen, the Dragons representative. Also, Lachlan Lamb coming over from the UK, the son of Adrian Lamb. And then, you know, you got Judah Rimbu in there as well. But there's another hooker that plays over in the UK for the Lee Leopards. His name is Edwin Ipapi. Now, I'm looking forward to seeing Edwin and Judah, you know, the 1-2 punch coming out of nine. But some big, big names there. And, you know, looking forward to that first match when they play Fiji Butty this Saturday. Speaking of Pacific champs, so we have this weekend, week one, it's starting on Friday night. We have the Australian Gillaroos taking on the PNG Orchids in Brisbane. And then that is a double header where the Kangaroos, they will be playing the Tongan 13 international match. We mentioned those big names that the Tongan have displayed in their squad. You know,
can they do it? Can they repeat that effort?
100% yeah. They can do it. Yeah. I reckon they're gonna
Brisbane is pumping up there with the sea of red going off, singing hymns, getting behind their team.
And then I'm hoping that Suva's jumping, because me and you will be over there covering that game live. And we have the first one will be the Fetu Samoa, the Samoan women's team. They'll be taking on the Tongan women's team. And then that will be a double header where the PNG men's will be taking on the Fiji men's. Home field advantage to the Fiji Butty. But geez, I'm looking forward to this.
I can't wait to take you around my hometown of Fiji.
Are you Nandi or Suva?
No, I'm a bit of both. La Toka, Suva, you know. In the west, I say Dolavina. Up in the Suva, I don't know if it's up or down, I can't remember, is Bulavinaka.
Remember, with the Pacific Champs, you can hear every Pacific Championships game live on ABC Radio Australia. You'd think that with the end of the rugby league season, there wasn't much news, but I felt like I spoke a fair bit there.
It's going vertical still. There's so much going on. Love it, T. Outstanding work. We're going to get over to rugby union now and touch on the WXV3 and the WXV2 competitions. As mentioned in our moment of the week, the big news for Samoa, with the Manusina Samoa team finishing second in the WXV3 competition and qualifying for the 2025 Rugby World Cup. They defeated Madagascar 46-15 in their final game. It's a huge achievement for Samoa. They've been outstanding this whole test campaign. They just lost in the Oceania competition earlier in the year. And now, since that the Australia A game where they won in Samoa on the bell with that penalty kick, hits the crossbar and goes over, they've been undefeated. Just the only draw that they had was against the Netherlands. But they've just played some really good footy. When I look at that game, they probably got off to a bit of a shaky start, maybe a little bit of a nervous start. Madagascar scored in the first 4 minutes to take an early lead. But, yeah, Samoa, they quickly responded with a try to fly half. Cassie Singatanga, who was outstanding in controlling the game alongside their scrum half, France Bloomfield. That nine, she's been a standout in every single game this year, especially in the WXV3 comp. Just the way she gets speed on her pass, it's accurate, it gets on the outside of the defenders, and it just allows their big runners to find weak shoulders and find holes and punch through and recycle the ball quick. And she's so quick to get to the breakdown to stay on top of them. And players like Joanna Lolo, their number eight, was able to benefit from that. She was just busting tackles, powerful in attack, 18 meters and scored two tries, and she was probably the best on ground in that game.
Two tries
in that game.
Yo.
Yeah, she's been good this whole tournament, but just reminds me of like the big Toilangi brothers. The way they would just run and just dominate. It's like she was running with spiders on her because no one wanted to tackle her. Like, she was outstanding. And even in that game as well, the thing probably that I love the most is the fact that they were under a little bit of adversity and they found a way to still stay in control. They had four yellow cards in that game. At one stage, they were down to 13 players on the field, and they were just able to find a way to control and find points and score tries. And we saw the inside center, Harmony Vatau, she crossed during that period, just a nice direct runner in the at inside center, bust through, scored a try, and they just didn't look phased, the Samoans. And I think that's an area of growth that they've achieved over this time staying in camp together, and the benefit of having touring games where they live with each other and pretty much be professionals for this whole time. It's going to lead nicely into their World Cup campaign for next year, having gone through this experience and having plenty more test matches to play leading up to that campaign. Moving over to Fijiana, they were unable to finish their campaign on a high, going down in a tight, well-fought game to Spain, 10-8. The game also was marked as an important moment for Fijiana as well, off the field, because before the game, head coach Moses Raluni announced his resignation just before kickoff, or maybe I think it was a day before kickoff. So it looked like the way that they played, they were trying to play for him because their defensive efforts were outstanding. Definitely different compared to the attitude they had the other weeks, especially when they had that big scoreline against Samoa. So they were right in it. 3-0, they were leading up until just on the stroke of halftime. But again, it's just that ill discipline on their try line just before halftime. Saw Fijiana receive a yellow card and Spain scoring moments later to lead 7-3 at halftime. Just like the first half, nothing in it. It was tight. Defense from both teams were outstanding. Spain were up 10-3 just before the final hooter. The ball was still in play with Fijiana attacking the line, and outside center Milania scores on the 82nd minute to potentially draw the game if they get the kick. And unfortunately, she missed the kick, and the final score ends up being 10-8. They didn't get the chance to draw the game. And Spain ended up being crowned champions for the WXV3 competition. So for Fiji, I think it's back to the drawing board. I'm pretty sure they'll be keen to get home, back to their families and their loved ones, and they'll regroup, get ready for the drawer campaign for Super W, and get ready for the World Cup as well, because they already qualified after being the Oceania champions. The Wallaroos, they secured the WXV2 title with a thrilling 31-22 win over Scotland in the grand final. Faitala Moleka, where are we? Wherever you get your podcast, you can listen back to that chat, just how good she was on that chat. She was outstanding in this game as well.
I feel like she's been outstanding this whole campaign.
Well, I think she's found her spot.
Yep.
Really feeling comfortable in that number 10 jersey. I think in the past she was playing a little bit of 10, coming fullback. Off the bench at fullback. So that game management, controlling the game and directing the ship mightn't have been part of her arsenal straight away, but now she's owning that area. She understands her game well, understands where the space is through kicking, passing, or running. And I think she's just doing an outstanding job. And her goal kicking, 100%, 4 from 4 conversions and a penalty goal. So 5 from 5. And big part of why they won, because that was through her boot, making sure that she converted some tough tries. On another great note, Cook Islander Ash Masters scoring the last try of the match as she became the highest cap Wallaroo with 34 caps. So she got to finish on a high and score the final try in that game, which means now the Wallaroos qualify for the World Cup as well. So we have a lot of our Pacifica talent heading over to that Women's Rugby World Cup in England in 2025. Looking forward to that. That's all we have for Rugby Union.
Nice, Sammy. Great work. Let's head over to Kiana Takarangi to cover all things Women's Rugby League.
Kia ora nā, ko ngā tokotoru toku ingoa, and you're listening to Nation Footy.
Yes, not with Shelley Long. I mentioned in our introduction, Shelley is currently getting her knee reconstruction with
as
the
ACL. As we speak, actually.
Yeah, so.
It's happening right now.
Instead, off the bench, we have the great Kiana Takarangi joining us to cover all things Women's Rugby League. Kiana, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, T. How you going?
I am well. Sammy, you're well?
I'm well. Yeah, I always find that when everyone in this segment, even Shelley does it, they just always go, "How you going, T?" But I get left in the dark. Yeah, I'm well, thanks. As you know, Kiana, I had a great weekend. Yourself?
I'm glad to hear it.
Well, Kiana, I covered the men's PNG versus Australian Prime Minister's 13 game that was held in Port Moresby. I believe you might have a few updates or notes with the women's game that was held before the men's. How did that game turn out?
Yeah, it was a massive win there by the Australian girls, the Australian PMs, but yeah, I think it was like 44-0 going into the half time. So the Aussies really ran a bit of a clinic in that first half. I think Papua New Guinea, the girls just kind of made it a little bit tough for them to get into the game. They only completed, I believe it was 3 of their 8 sets. So even just, you know, 8 sets, there's not a lot of boards. It's hard to score points without the footy. And I just thought Australia really took the most or made the most of all their opportunities that PNG presented them. But much better second half from the PNG girls, which was really good to see. The final score ended up being, I think it was 50-0. I think they only scored one try. Yeah, 50-0. So a really strong second half by the PNG girls. And I'm sure, you know, all of the, you know, fans that came out to support, because there were a lot of supporters there to cheer on their girls before the main game. But, yeah, I'm sure they would have been really happy with that second half performance from the girls.
You played the PNG women's, the PNG Orchids last year in the Pacific Championships. You know, what's one of their strengths when you played them last year? And, you know, that they'll be looking towards in the Pacific Champions Cup when they'll take on Australia and New Zealand in the next couple of weeks.
I think their strength is literally their strength. You know, I remember running into some of those girls and I was getting hit by a brick wall a couple of times. So, yeah, they've got a lot of, you know, powerful players across the board. And even in yesterday's game, there were a lot of hits that were unreal in the game. So, yeah, I think that's probably their biggest strength. You could see that they'd improved on a few areas of their game, like their ruck control was a lot better. Yesterday, you could see they'll kind of make a bit more effort there to slow down the play the balls. But then, yeah, I just felt like there were a couple of times where maybe their spacing and their numbers weren't correct in Australia, just kind of capitalised on those opportunities once they saw the overlap in the space that PNG kind of left. But, yeah, I feel for myself, it's if I ever come up against them again, I'll be trying not to run straight into them because
I actually noticed that in the men's game, and I said that earlier, that the PNG Kumuls, you know, they are known for how hard they are and, you know, that granite feeling of their bodies. They feel like rock. But I noticed when Australia played them on the weekend that when they were running straight, they were getting absolutely folded. But then once they started to move the ball side to side and trying to, you know, work them, you know, move the ball, that's when they started to cause a bit of, you know, damage when they were running the ball. So, yeah, good tip. Don't run straight at the PNG team. Do you think it's worrying signs for them? You know, they lost 44-0 at halftime. They've ended up losing 50-0 at full time. They're coming up against Australia and New Zealand, their full strength teams. Do you think there will be some worrying signs going into these next couple of weeks with the Pacific Champions Cup?
I think it'll definitely be challenging for them. The team that they played against yesterday, being the PMs, you know, a lot of those girls, you know, I think a handful of them will be playing or are likely to be playing for the actual Australian team.
Yeah.
But it's so competitive in that space. You know, there's a lot of girls that could easily be in that starting Australian team as well. So I think, you know, the scorelines we might see could be similar. I don't think they'd be any worse. And I just think that the PNG girls will be like a lot better for having the experience of playing against, you know, the best teams in the world.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. Hopefully they can be competitive in those two games against Australia and New Zealand and learn a lot from it. Moving over to the PAC champs with the other teams, Tonga, Samoa, Fiji, and of course the Cook Islands. We saw Tonga go into camp. You know, a bit of footage have come out of them and how they're connecting as a team and a bit of their training footage. What have you made of their preparation so far?
Yeah, it looks unreal. I've just been kind of seeing a couple of updates on social media, and it looks like the girls are having a good time. And as you said, it's all about building connection. There's only 1 week to, you know, to work on stuff, and it looks like they're doing a good job so far.
Hey, with I know you're going to camp this Saturday, and I only know that because Mum told me.
The content lady.
And yous are travelling together with the men's team, the Cook Island men's team, same flight over to Suva. What's that experience like where you've got the women's and the men's travelling together into a Pacific Championships tournament?
Yeah, I think it will be a first. I don't think we've ever travelled together with the men before. So it'll be interesting. Obviously, Brad, my brother, will be there. So it won't be anything new for me being around him, unfortunately. But maybe for the girls, it might be a pretty cool experience for the girls, kind of rubbing shoulders with some of the men. And it'd be cool if, you know, they're asking for some tips from the boys, or, you know, just trying to gain some knowledge and experience from the boys, if they'd be happy to do it. But I know that in previous interactions with the men, everyone's a bit like standoffish at first. There's not, you know, it takes a couple, maybe like T, I can picture you as one that would happily come over and
break the ice.
Oh, yeah. Always got to, you know, welcome everyone in, make them feel comfortable. And then by the end of the camp, everyone's best friends. With all the players, what is one thing or a couple of things that all the players look forward to when they're leading into camp? Like, it's like, for me, it was always, I always looked forward to catching up with the boys that I don't usually get to see, you know, especially the ones that live overseas or in different towns. What do you think? What are you looking forward to, and what do you think the other players are looking forward to?
Yeah, I think I'm the same with that. Reconnecting with some of those that are interstate and over in NZ, I'm looking forward to catching up with the girls. I know that I really enjoyed the cultural side of it. I loved, you know, the drums and the singing and the music. So that's always good fun. I don't think everyone enjoys that part, though. I think a lot of the girls from that and aren't too keen on it. But, I think that's the unique thing about this Pacific Championships, is it's all about our culture. And, I love just really getting into it and, you know, just being fully immersed in that, because, again, we don't get that experience at any other level.
And your take on the Fijian women's team, not this weekend, next weekend. Do you know some of the areas that you'll be attacking to hopefully come away with the victory?
Nah, not at all, to be honest. I've seen their team list and that's all I know. And I know that there's a lot of good girls across the park. So for us, I think we'll just have to focus on ourselves as much as we can, because it's going to be a challenge. They've got a lot of strong players within their team. You know, they've got some strong halves in Lutu and Sede, who both play NRLW. And, you know, there's a few NRLW players across the board. So we'll just be doing our best to, focus on ourselves.
Yeah. Last one. Have you played in Fiji before?
No, I haven't.
It is hot. It is steaming there. So
Suva's hotter as well.
Suva is hot. It's wet, like muggy too. So I don't think I've ever been to Suva without it raining.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really.
Take wetter. The rain jacket.
Yeah, take the rain. But it's hot too. So it's like so muggy take as.
Rain jackets with no sleeves.
That's it. That's the one. All right.
There it is.
That's the tip.
All right, Kiana. Well, thank you again for joining us on Nijan Footy, and we will catch you in Suva when you land on Saturday.
Yes, see boys over there.
Talo Falava. My name is Annalisa Seal, and you're listening to Nijan Footy.
Yo, our guest this week is massive, and I mean literally a big Tongan unit, 200 centimetres, 120 kilos.
Are you talking yourself up?
Yeah, this is me. When I look in the mirror, I feel like that's me, but it's not in reality. But he made his debut with the Melbourne Rebels at just 18 years old against the Lions in South Africa back in 2017. He now finds himself playing for SBW and SLW's former club, in Japan at the Panasonic Saitama Wild Knights. Esei Hangana, welcome to Nijan Footy, brother.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. SLW.
Yeah, so I'm going to get to that. Firstly, SBW, who's that?
Sunnyvale.
Yeah, SLW, who's that?
Oh, not too sure. You might have to remind me.
Yeah, I'm going to – Samuel Leslie Wykes, yours truly.
Yes, sir.
I had a bigger impact and influence on Panasonic than SBW did. But anyway, it's all good.
Who had the most money, but?
Oh, man, who's still earning the most? Yeah, SBW, he's killing it. He's killing it. But anyway, bro, let's rip straight into it. You made your debut at a young age with the Melbourne Rebels, Junior Wallabies, and you decided to head over to Japan, you know, at a young age. What was the reason for that move?
Oh, it was a couple of things, I'd say. Two things I put it to. Obviously, first of all, the opportunity to come over to a new culture and learn under a coach like Robbie Deans. My dad was, he's the one that knew Robbie more than I did, because that's like who Dad used to watch back then. But he knew straight away the calibre of what type of team, if he's the coach, you know. And I hadn't known much about Panasonic. I heard through, I'm sure you know Will Tupo.
Yep.
He gave me some advice on like what they were like and how they were a classy outfit, and kind of just like learnt on the run, to be honest. And then the other reason was the opportunity to provide for my family. I've always been, as growing up, like I always wanted to be like a provider for my parents and my family back home. And I think that was kind of one of the biggest influences, was financially being able to provide for mum and dad.
What was it like to make a decision like that at such a young age and early in your career?
Oh, it was tough, actually. I didn't really know like what I wanted to do at the time. And I kind of like had to put my faith in like God and like just say, like, if this is what you want me to do, then I'm going to commit to it. And being at that young age, like, I'd always looked up when I was young playing for the Wallabies and putting a gold jersey on. So it was hard to like kind of decide, do I give up on a dream to do what I've always wanted to do at heart? And at the end of the day, I think God chose my path and I just decided to go with it and commit.
Was it difficult to separate from your family and move to a foreign country? And what were some of the challenges that you found, you know, moving to Japan at such a young age?
It was actually, it was pretty difficult. I was kind of lucky. I kind of learned a little bit when I moved from Sydney to Melbourne, kind of realized like moving away from family, not as far as moving from Japan to Australia, but kind of learned a little bit of lessons. And then right before I came over here with like one of my best mates, Samisi Tapol, and we kind of went through the journey together. Like we're both islanders. We're both like kind of living over here on our own. And we sort of found like another little island community here, a lot of Tongan boys that we connected with. And it kind of took away that factor of missing home. Obviously, you miss that chance to catch up with family every weekend or whenever you can. But when you build your own little community and your own little family here, it kind of makes things easier.
Yeah, there's a strong Tongan presence at Panasonic. If I think of the very first Tongan that went over there was Hotboy Taione. And we've got Koli Holani there as well. What's it like having Tongan culture within your team who are fluent in Tongan and fluent in Japanese and English, you know, mixing it in like Japanese culture every day?
Honestly, taking me back to like my ties, and I'm so grateful to have guys like Asavalu, Koli, and like the OGs, like Muli Tomofolau. These are guys who have come over from straight from the islands and gone into a Japanese culture where it's strictly Japanese language, and they like barely know any English, so you kind of have to transition to knowing Tongan to Japanese. And it's cool, man. Like I feel like the Japanese people, they're so welcoming to us Tongan people and us islanders, and they've like put their best foot forward for us people.
It brings a smile to my face because it reminds me of when I was in the UK, and connection's a big part of our culture, you know, connecting with the people that, you know, our people that were growing up with the same values and backgrounds. And I feel like we ask our guests these questions about our culture and our connections, but what have you learned from the Japanese culture, you know, living over there for a few years now?
Quite a bit, actually. I think the biggest thing is respect over here. Like, they've got the utmost respect for anyone and everything. Like, it's a different type of respect over here, and I've got so much like respect for them for how hardworking they are. And you know how in our culture, like, respect's such a big thing, but I swear over here, it speaks multitudes like how big respect is.
Yeah, it's next level, isn't it, over there? You're not wrong.
Yeah.
Randomly, I got an inbox message from Xavier Stowers, who's now with you in Japan. And I didn't realize his old man was the Stowers that played number 8 for Samoa. And he was telling me, he goes, hey, I listened to Nijan Footy and I'm going over to Panasonic and to play over there. We had a phone call and then I was like, what do you like with nudity? And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, oh, well, you know, Japan culture, like you've got to get nude and shower in the onsen as a big team and it's just normal. And he's like, oh, nah, man, I don't know if I can do that.
No undies in the shower.
No undies in the shower. It's just straight nude, man. Like you heard Kef, you know, big Kef, he was talking about the wild boar chasing him and he got out in the nude and ran away. But you talk about the culture and immersing yourself in Japanese culture. How have you found that bit? And how's Xavier? Is he getting in his birthday suit, getting amongst it?
Oh, man. The culture, it's a proper shock, eh, when we first got here. Just seeing the level of comfortability that like some dudes have here, it's crazy. But you like, you know, it's like any other kind of team environment. You have to like immerse yourself. You have to get in and amongst it. You can't be the outlier. You can't be the guy that just, you know, that's the only way you kind of build respect is if you just jump in and do those type of things. little story I kind of like. It took me like 10 minutes to get into my first shower. Just... like, we finished training and like it was just taking me a while. Like, I don't know why I was stressing for it.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing, isn't it? When you talk about, you know, someone's there standing fully nude, but they've got their slippers on, their indoor shoes, and they're brushing their teeth in front of you. It's just the craziest thing
all
you see.
All the English guys used to say, why do all you Islanders wear your undies in the shower? Go, oh, bro, it's like it's a religious thing. so they stopped asking us.
It's crazy because I went from like the rebels and like there was like a good crew of us Islanders and we were all like similar thing. We'd all wear like jocks and stuff into the showers and then come over and the complete opposite. It's just like two different sides of things.
Oh man,
that's great. This interview's just taking a turn somewhere.
We'll bring it back. Let's bring it back to some rugby stuff because Sammy's getting a bit too excited over here. Well, as you know, Pacific Nations Cup is we look at Tonga, Japan. You're also eligible to play for Australia. Well, you're eligible soon to play for Japan. Where does your heart lie when it comes to international rugby?
Oh, it's a tough question. I've been tossing on the last couple years, actually, what I wanted to do. I do want to say that I would love to put a Japanese jersey on by the end of this season upcoming. You know, God forbid, and that I don't get injured and stuff. But at the end of the season, hopefully I have a good season and see how things go. I'd love to wear that red and white. But in saying that, like, I can't put away the fact that I did dream of playing in the gold jersey. And I also did dream of playing for Tonga when I was a young kid. Yeah, I think for me at the moment, just how things are heading, I probably want to commit to playing for Japan right now.
Who do you lean on to help you make such a big decision?
My parents at the moment, they've been the biggest factor. They help me decide.
Is your mum and dad based in Australia?
Yeah, they're based in Sydney, Australia.
Have they managed to come over to Japan and have you managed to get them over and show them the new hometown?
Yeah, Dad has. My mum hasn't been able to make it over yet, but Dad loves it. He's been over here to Kumagai, and I've taken him over to Otter as well just to show him around where we used to be and show him the old clubhouse and stuff. But they love it. Like, Dad's a big fan of the Japanese.
What's it like when you speak with your old man and you bring him to the other side of the world, like in Japan, and he's come from Tonga? You know, what's it like when you see his eyes light up being in a foreign country, watching his son just do his thing?
I think it hit the most last year when I brought him over, and it was like a heartfelt moment for both of us because he'd worked so hard and put so many hours into me, and I'd like just always wanted to repay him, and for him to see that smile on his face. Like, we played the Reds 2 years ago over here, and after the game, I'd like walked over to him and just like was bawling tears because it was the first time he'd ever seen me play rugby over in Japan since 6 or 7 years ago because of COVID and everything, restrictions kind of hit. And for him to be in another country, a country he's never been to, it's such a moment for me.
Oh, that's awesome, bro. Do you know the journey that your mum and dad took from, you know, whether it was Tonga or how far it goes back with your grandparents from Tonga to New Zealand to Australia? Do you know that connection and that journey?
Yeah, I do, actually. It was, mum moved over at a young age and dad had gone on like a journey from Tonga to Fiji to do uni, and then he went over to New Zealand to work for a little bit. And then he made his way over to Australia, and that's how they met. My grandma and everything moved over, and then basically they'd met in Australia. And I think they'd known each other from before in Tonga, but then they got married when they were in Australia, and that's where everything kicked off.
And do you know what village in Tonga you're from?
Yeah, I'm from Fasi and Nomuka.
Have you been back there?
Not for a while. I think the last time I was back in Fussy was, I think, 2013 or 2012, maybe.
Oh, honestly, when you're talking about your parents taking them over and sharing the experience and the journey, it just takes me back when I brought my parents over to Japan for the very first time, and they just couldn't believe that they were there. They were, you know, the age of 50 and 65 or something like that, whatever it was, but they were just spinning out that their son was playing over there. It seems like your dad's had a massive influence on your decision making. You know, what do you think he would think of if you did put on a Japanese jersey and not a Wallabies or a Tongan jersey?
I think Dad would be proud. He's always said, like, chase to play that level above and see how far you can push yourself. And he's always been the one to push to me to play international rugby. And I've always wanted to play international rugby, and if it's in that red and white jersey, then so be it. And I know he'll be proud, and I know Mum will be proud as well. But now it's just put my head down and graft until I do that. Got to kind of be smart in the fact that, like, if I do commit to one, I think it's kind of saying, like, I'm going to commit to playing in this place. So at the moment, like, the rules are, I was the captain in Japan, I don't count as a foreigner. So that would help me in the long run in playing in Japan. But I think if I was to go back to Super Rugby, you count as like a marquee signing, I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
And then if I was to obviously cap for Tonga in Australia, it kind of makes it hard to stay and play a little bit longer in Japan.
Taking a bit of a shift from the rugby field, is the food actually that good in Japan?
Oh, bro, it's next level and you've got to find out for yourself, but it's unreal, man. The food here is amazing, like. And the biggest thing is just the rice. It's just so good.
The rice is good.
Like, oh, the rice is unbelievable.
Like, true.
Yeah, I always thought back home I was like such a good rice maker. I was good at making rice. But then I come over here and they just make it 10 times better somehow.
Oh, that's a big call. Cook Islanders love their rice. And, you know, I'm actually heading over to Japan next year. So that's one thing on the list of things to do. Now, you debuted for Rebels, one of the youngest players to debut for the Melbourne Rebels. What's your thoughts on the club folding this year?
I actually had it was pretty tough for me to see that happen. Like, that's part of my history. And to see them being taken away, it's kind of that thing as well. Like, my history's kind of been taken away at the same time. I'd love to see them come back into the game later on. Like, hopefully rugby grows in Melbourne because there's still like a big chunk of talent that can come from that region.
Yeah.
And a lot of boys that like I've played with, like Rob Liotta, Sione Tupulotu, like those guys are stepping up into the international scene now and playing like some of the best footy. Like, I just think you can't discard them. And I was kind of sad that they got cut, but at the end of the day, I think business is business.
One thing I do know is those players, Rob Liotta, when they come to the Waratahs next year, hopefully they're going to be lifting the cup at the end of the season.
I said they should, but with the amount of players going there, they should do pretty well.
For sure.
So just, you know, when we speak about, you know, decision-making and immersing yourself in different cultures, what's the biggest lesson you've learned from your movement to the Rebels and to Japan and now you're in your mid-20s? What's the biggest lessons you've learned from your journey so far?
There's a couple. I think the biggest one's been like hard work and being a smart worker at the same time. I think I learned hard work coming through the Rebels and making sure that, you know, you do the basics, you do the one percenters. But as I'd come over to Japan, I kind of learned like to be a smart, hard worker because they work so hard here. They do so much extras. They do so many skills, but it can be like meaningless at times. Whereas if you like, especially now, we're trying to, you want to plan your individual skills. You want to make sure you're prepared for what you want to work on post-sessions. And I've kind of learned that type of thing. Like, preparation has been the biggest thing. Robbie Deans has had the biggest influence on my mental since being here. And he's helped me grow in that space.
I'm a big believer in work smarter, not harder. So that makes total sense to me. For a young Pacific Islander wanting to make or might needing to make that decision at a young age, what advice would you give someone in that position to make the decision to change countries, to go to a foreign country, to pursue a dream and being a professional rugby league, rugby union player?
Oh, that's a tough question. Piece of advice. I've actually got two. I think one thing I learned on the most moving over was my faith. And if you may not be the biggest faith believer, but lean on something or someone and like commit to that. Really like use them and help like to help you throughout your journey. And then the other thing is just what you always, it's a cliche, like make sure you're the hardest worker in the room. Obviously I haven't been the fittest or the strongest growing up, but I always just try my best and whatever I can do and work hard. I think that'll take especially our people a long way.
That's the gold right there, you know what I mean? It's you're giving that knowledge, and I know our listeners will definitely appreciate that. You've mentioned faith a couple times now. Being in Japan, how do you keep connected to your faith?
Through the Bible, actually. It's my own sort of journey through reading the Bible and continuing my faith through the Bible. Also try and like go to church when every opportunity that I can. And maybe weekends I can't make it, but I know that if I can commit and have my faith, prayer is another big one for me. I pray before and after games. It's just part of my way and part of my life now, and it's something that I I feel like I can't shift away from, just because I'm so used to it and it's given me strength and it's helped me on my journey.
Does that also help with like being isolated, like in making sure that you have something, because your mind can wander being over there and being isolated and being lonely? Has that helped a lot as well?
It has, actually, like in a way, like having someone else to talk to, him helping you, putting your problems on him so he can help you. That's kind of helped me not feel isolated and not feel on my own.
Is what about the other Polynesians in your team? Do they have a strong faith background as well?
Yeah, they do, actually. There's all of us Tongans over here, we're all Christians, and a lot of them, I know that we're all driven by our faith over here, and you can tell, like, a lot of the boys over here, that the islanders especially are driven by their faith.
Has Collie, does he still do the mean tunubuaka there, like cooks the pigs at the ground? Do they still allow that there at your training complex?
It's kind of changed, actually. They did it for the first time last year, but, you know, because of COVID and stuff, they haven't been able to do wakas and stuff on ground.
Oh, really?
Because, you know, the old setting at Oto was a bit more private. So now, because it's a bit more public, we can't really do many more things at the clubhouse these days.
Oh, really? Oh, that's a spin out, man. He used to do the, like, they used to order the pigs on Amazon. And it would come in this airlock bags or something, just frozen. And you go, what the hell? This guy did a pig to my doorstep.
He always makes sure to put one on for Christmas. So it's always usually Christmas at Collie's.
Yeah, beautiful.
Hey, last one from me. It's probably not a question, but more a favour. The next time you play the Shimizu Blue Sharks, make sure you take Lima Sopoanga's head off.
I'll do my best.
Right. That scoreline's 100-0. Like, no word of a lie.
Blue Sharks get pumped.
Yeah, the Blue Sharks will get pumped. Like, it's Banasong is one of the best in Japan, and the difference between top league, the top two, compared to like where Lima's playing, it's chalk and cheese. They're getting pumped. I know from experience, because we versus Panathinaikos lost by 80 in that one, and it hasn't changed much.
All I know when it comes to Lima, if the yen's coming in the bank, he's not fussed.
Yeah, doesn't care. Final one for me as well, just with, you know, everything that's happening, obviously the decision making, the anthems. Have you gone to Collie? Because obviously he knows the Tongan anthem, he knows the Japanese anthem, and I'm sure you know the Aussie anthem. Are you well across all of them, just in case you have to make, when you do make that decision?
Slowly making my way through the Japanese one at the moment. And I've got a fair idea on how the Tongan and the Australian one go at the moment. But learning Japanese is kind of, it's steadying my anthem learning at the moment.
Oh, man, no, that's unreal. Well, to be honest, if I know I can say this now, but with Eddie Jones and Jamie Joseph, with their style of training, I'd be like almost leaning not to play until they find a new coach, because the training is just too hard. Have you heard any, before we go, have you heard any stories of the Japanese players about how hard they're training?
I actually have, to be honest. So we heard like stories of guys who are like doing fitness until they passed out. And I think they had like a session last year in the middle of the year during like the hottest period. And one of the boys, I think it might've been Dylan Riley, like suffered like dehydration or something. He'd like, just absolutely run into the ground type of behavior.
We wish you all the best, man. I love the growth and the journey that you've been on, and being able to be in a position of maturity to understand that you're going to walk with faith and trust. You've got good people in your corner to make the right decision for yourself and your family. So nothing but love and respect, and we wish you well on your journey, bro. Malo apito.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it so much, and appreciate what you guys do for our community as well. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, much love, brother. Nijan Knowledge. Yes, Nijan Knowledge. Every Monday, we like to finish the show where one of us will be asking the other one three questions. We keep a score, and at the end of the season, the loser has to get a Nijan footy tattoo on their bum. The score is,
Sam's
on 18.
I'm on
16.5. And I should get a point for messaging you last night, reminding you that you're up on Nijan footy.
I was all over it. I had it sorted.
I should have said nothing, because usually when you're not prepared,
I would have been doing it in the elevator. I would have been doing it in the elevator on the way up. But I've been thinking about this long and hard, too, about where I'm going to get my tattoo. Because regardless of whether who wins, I'm coming with.
I'm getting it done. Just depends how, I've got to ask my wife
how big, where.
Do I get your face on there?
Oh, you have to get the face. The cartoon, the face? Yeah, the cartoon images.
That's us. So, yeah, can't wait for that. It'll just join
I'm more than happy to get the tattoo. It's the pain.
No, the bum's all right. I've got one on the bum.
Yeah, I know. You told me it looks bad.
It's bad, but it doesn't hurt.
And it looks incompleted.
It is. It's 5 o'clock somewhere. But anyway, let's get onto the questions. I'm up. Okay.
What do you got for us, brother?
With the Manu Sina Samoa women's rugby team qualifying for the 2025 Rugby World Cup, in total, how many World Cups have they now qualified for?
Man, you mentioned it too.
Is it A? I'm going to give you multiple choice here, just because I love you. Is it A, 3? Is it B, 4? Or is it C, 5?
A, 3.
Oh, you went quick there. You should have taken a moment to think about it and gone with 4.
B, 4. Did you say 3 when you mentioned
No, I said in the news earlier? 2014 was the last time.
Oh, so you didn't say it.
So I gave you one there. But anyway, 2002, 2006, 2014, and now 2025. So 4 times for the Manu Sina Samoa team to qualify for the World Cup.
Great work.
0 for you. What year did the Aussie PMs 13 first compete against PNG? When did that first start?
Damn.
What year?
No choice.
No choice. I'll give you a closest two, as in within two years either side. That's good. That's good enough. Yeah, that's fair.
Well, that's a long because PNG was the first Pacific nation to have a rugby league team in 1979.
Yeah, but it's nowhere near there. But remember the PM's 13 game, that game alone against Australia.
What are we in now? 2024.
Yep.
Where am I heading? How far back?
Is that too hard, do you think? Do you want another choice to help you out here?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's between the late 90s and 2010. It's in between there. And you still get the option to get within two. So that's outstanding. I may as well give you the answer. Any more?
The late 90s and 2010.
So in between.
Like early 2000s.
Ooh.
Let's go the late 90s.
Like late, in between. And you got in between 2010. So go with that first bit you were talking about. I'm coaching you through it. I may as well give it to you.
1999.
Nah, 2005.
That was the worst, bro.
how many more guesses do you want from me?
2005, bro. 2005.
You said early 2000. I was like, you're on the money. Just go with it. Within two.
I would have went 2001.
Yeah, you still would have got it wrong. But anyway, in that game, who was the coach of PNG? Was it A, Wayne Bennett? Was it B, Bob Bennett? Or C, Steve Bennett?
There better not be a Steve Bennett.
Those options again. Is it A, Wayne Bennett? B, Bob Bennett? Or C, Steve Bennett?
A, Wayne Bennett. There better not be a Bob or Steve.
Well, it was the great Bob Bennett was the coach in 2005 for PNG.
Are you joking?
No, that's it. The great Bob Bennett. Did I know him? He also coached the Lao team. No, I can't remember. But anyway, that was him. There you go, T.
We need to ask our producer about these questions.
Oh, how good. Hey, Bob Bennett, champion.
Boomerangs come back around, bro.
That's our time up for today for Nesian Footy. Remember, you can catch up on Shush. I'm trying to do my outro here.
All our chats with athletes
like premiership winner Pani Hopewate. Wherever you get your podcast, we're going to Fiji and we're going live from there.
Bob Bennett, you reckon?
Bob Bennett was the coach, mate. This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.